Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome on this lovely Sunday morning with myself, Muhammad Lambat, on Radio Islam Medium Wave 1548 on the Globe Trotting Program. Alhamdulillah. And what a lovely day today. Partly cloudy, fantastic day, alhamdulillah. We've had good rains this past week. Shukr, alhamdulillah. We've had good soaking rains. And you know, I noticed one thing. In the garden that we have here, alhamdulillah, we have some tomatoes and spinach and all just the home vegetables. And by watering it every day with a hose pipe, watering it every afternoon or evening, whatever it may be, and you will get those sprouts, you'll get them coming, growing, whatever it is. But one natural rain waterfall that comes down on there, the next morning you just see how all these plants are just blossoming, and what a change. Allah's kudrat, alhamdulillah, with the rainwater that we have. So we ask the Almighty Allah to give us the rain throughout the world, throughout, especially in all these deserving places. Currently, South Africa is running through a drought which is unreal. Although we're getting these rains, but as we see with this Operation Hydrate, what's happening, it's just unbearable. And it is so sad to see what is happening in those towns. There's absolutely no water. There's boreholes that are running dry. So we make dua to the Almighty Allah that Allah must just give us rains, beneficial rains, sufficient rains that can just bring back all these conditions, all the wet conditions. The animals are suffering. We ask Allah for the animals' sake, please give us water. I'm into that. So we find that it's happening. Animals are dying. If you go into the country towns, take a drive down, go for 300-400 kilos out of Johannesburg, go towards Free State, go towards Mpumalanga, go towards the north, Limpopo, and you will see all those, all the land that is there that's got those animals. You will see how these animals, they are also losing weight. There are some towns where the animals are dying by the hundreds. So we ask Almighty for help. But for that, we must change our akhlaq, we must change our personality. Let us become better Muslims. In whichever way, let us become better Muslims. The little we can do, let us do that. Alhamdulillah, with the farais that we're doing, let us continue with the faraz. All the faraz eggs. But the heart that we have, let us change our hearts. Let us open our hearts up. Let us not have small hearts, and let us not have all this bickering and all that going along. Let's change that, and if that changes, naturally Allah will change our hearts for the better. Allah will then accept from us our faraid acts. But if we our hearts are not pure, our hearts are we're keeping all filth in our hearts, how can we beg from Allah for all these good conditions to come upon us? We can read our salahs, which is faraz. You know, we tend to say we're reading our salah, alhamdulillah, we're reading our salah, yes. But look at our acts, look at our actions. Let's change that, inshallah. Allah will make it easy for us all. Allah will bring all good conditions. Allah won't bring upon us leaders and rulers which are corrupt. Allah will bring peaceful conditions for the Muslims, inshallah, and for people in general, for all occupying a country, inshallah. So we make dua to the Almighty Allah. Let us change our... The little we can do. We don't say change your lifestyle completely overnight. It's sometimes difficult to do that, although that's the ideal situation. But let us, in a simple way, little by little, let us change. Today we change to want something better. We do something different in the light of Islam, or in the light of goodness also. We do something better today, and we maintain it. Tomorrow we do something else better, and we maintain it, and we continue with that until we find goodness coming out. We find, you know, like when I see road rage, it makes me wonder what goes through people. You know, when you travel abroad, you go to, especially in the eastern countries, Far East, Middle East, you will not find road rage. People traveling in 4 or 5 lanes, and if somebody wants to come in from the extreme left lane to the right lane, they'll manage. All they do is they just put their hand through, or put their hand on the side out of the window, and they would enter. They would indicate they would enter. They would go lane to lane. Here, even if there's a gap of 2-3 cars, and if you have to cut in, Next best thing, you'll get the loudest of horns coming from the back of you. You'll get the different types of fingers that's popping out of the windows of the cars and so on. You'll get the lights flicking at you. It happens. And you see it happening every day. I'm traveling every morning in midst of traffic on this M1, which is now becoming more chaotic because of the roadworks, but we need it though. But you see it happening there every day. I see it. But what can you do? Just down and continue. When the person is swearing you from the back and come on next to you and he's pointing fingers, just look in front and continue. Just ignore them. Don't also retaliate and do these things. So all these things matter. Just be calm. Be calm. Also on the roads, be calm. Inshallah, Allah will make it easy for us. Alhamdulillah. We've had, like, as I say, we've had lovely rains. We may go out for more rains, inshallah. Now, Alhamdulillah, as we, many of us know that there's been some students that came from Vietnam 5-6 years ago, came to study here, who didn't know how to read Takhti, who had to be taught the basic letters of Islam. The alphabet had to be taught to them. Alhamdulillah, we've had 2 alimas completed. They're leaving on coming Sunday. They're going back to Vietnam, inshallah. It's going to be such a sad day for us all. And then we have one student who qualified a hafiz on Thursday. He qualified, he's done. We've got another one who's qualifying just before Ramadan. He's got 3 or 4 paras left. We've got another one who's going to be finishing his final year alim, inshallah, within about 2-3 months even. So the fruits are now coming out, alhamdulillah. So we make dua to Almighty Allah. Allah make it easy for them. Go back, because these are the first Hufaz and the first Alims and Alimas in the history of Vietnam that have qualified to go back into their villages. And inshallah, it must make a difference. Although the mindset of those village people is very, very different. They look at niqab, they look at all that very differently. And inshallah, Allah will make it that they integrate into society, and they must fit into society, inshallah. And they must make a difference. And that will benefit the world at large, inshallah. So we make dua for that. And Allah make it easy for everybody, inshallah. I just got a message also. It says, the Muslim farmers are having a conference in Newcastle this weekend. And it's becoming dire because they're losing lots of their crops. They're losing lots of their animals. And inshallah, you know, with all this, some good must come out, inshallah. We make dua for that. Allah make it easy for us all, inshallah. And another thing I just want to, before I go on, I want to talk about Scotland today. Before I go on with that, I get lots of information from lots of people via email, via SMS, via WhatsApp. People send me information. People send me letters. People send me just general information. People ask me to read it for them on air. Sometimes I can't just read just about anything and everything, because it sometimes jeopardizes situations. I cannot just read anybody's one-sided story and not take the other side story of whatever problem somebody may have on some issues of traveling or whatever it may be. If I don't read your letter, you may send me a long letter with your problem, whatever you may have, experience, whatever it is. If I don't read your letter, please let us have akhlaq as Muslims, and let us not be spiteful, and let us not be nasty. Please, I've just experienced something like that. Let us not be nasty when I don't read something on air. I choose not to read something on air for reasons. Because I check out on experiences of other people on the same tour or whatever it may be. And I find that it's not something that I should read and highlight the negative of certain destinations or certain places or something like that. I got to weigh the situation before I read it. So I've got to be balanced with these things. And if I don't read it, don't send me nasty SMSs, and don't become nasty towards me with other people and bad mouth and things like that. I've just experienced it, I'm telling you, and do wrong things. Have a clean heart when you're doing something like that. It will help you, it will help me, it will help us all. So let us not be funny people by doing something like that. Alhamdulillah, we try to cover the best, we try to cover everything good when it comes to certain destinations. When it comes to a problem also, we will weigh the situation and see if there are more than 1, 2, 3 people that experience similar problems, and we find that there is a bit of an issue. Just be very careful of certain things of a certain destination, which is something maybe just be general, but if it's a lengthy problem that you have and a recurring problem, and it becomes a problem where you repeat it in 1-2 page letters, I think that's unfair if you're begging, or not if you're begging, if you're insisting that I read it for you on air. It's not fair. I don't think we should do something like that. So let's just clear ourselves. Let's just clean our hearts up when it comes to things like that. Let us, irrespective of who we are, we may be laymen, we may be learned people, whatever it may be, but let us have clean hearts when it comes to things like that. And let us not spite by doing spiteful things against me in particular, I would say. But anyway, be that as it may, being on air, being in public like this, is all these challenges that we got to undertake. So I accept it. But then, you know, I forgive one and all for whatever they do. Allah make it easy. Allah accept, inshallah. Now, the types of tourism that you get. There are three basic forms of tourism. You get the domestic tourism, you get inbound tourism, and you get outbound tourism. Now, domestic tourism refers to activities of a visitor within their own country of residence and outside their home. For example, South Africans visiting other parts of South Africa. And then you have the inbound tourism, which refers to the activities of a visitor from outside of the country of residence. Example, a Nigerian coming to South Africa, for example. And then you have the outbound tourism, which refers to activities of a resident visitor outside of their country of residence. For example, a South African visiting any other country in the world. That's outbound tourism. Now, the tourism industry in any country is primarily a private sector industry consisting of businesses, some very large, including international hotel groups and airlines, as well as small and medium-sized businesses, industry groups, and bodies. You'll find maybe just one small little travel agent company getting hold of a company in another country. They build a relationship and they send 20, 30 people at a time from here to those people on that side, do some tourism with them on that side, let them enjoy, come back, and take their experiences and change as they go along. So you have that type of industry as well. And then you have the domestic tourism, which is the core business of, it's the revenue of the country. And with demand peaking during the school holidays, particularly during Easter, during like this Christmas weekends that we have, Christmas holidays and so on, June, July school holidays, which we have also, dealing with the demands of international visitors requires specialist knowledge, cultural understanding, and investments. So there's so much when it comes to tourism. And if any of you is listening, and if you are in the tourism industry, you will know best that when it comes to any tourists coming from anywhere in the world, you treat them the best, you show them the best, it makes a big difference, because then on word of mouth, references, they come back again. And that's what we require as a country as a whole, and as an individual business. And that's what you require to grow your business. You obviously need to prove to your clients that I am showing you a country which is the best, in my knowledge, which is the best, and I'm going to take you to a place, and I'm going to take you to a country which I'm going to show you whatever you require to see. And that is what benefits you and the country as a whole. So that is just basic on tourism. Now, I said we're talking on Scotland. First of all, where is Scotland? It is small but mighty. Scotland's geography is a huge part of its charm, from wild coastlines to sandy coves, rolling hills, towering monroes, dense forests, and sparkling lochs. Scotland is home to some of the most stunning landscapes in the British Isles. And with a strategic location near the best of Europe and beyond, it's the perfect destination for work as well as play. And Scotland on the map. Now, Scotland is part of the United Kingdom, and it occupies the northern third of Great Britain. Scotland's mainland shares a border with England to the south. It is home to almost 800 small islands, so it's an archipelago, including the Northern Isles of Shetland and Orkney, the Hebrides, Arran and Skye. Scotland's location is to the midwest of Europe and is surrounded by several different seas. Located to the east of Scotland is the North Sea, which divides the country from other areas of Europe, in particular Norway and the rest of Scandinavia. Across the North Sea to the southeast is Denmark, and further south still is Germany. North and west of Scotland's mainland is the Atlantic Ocean. Traveling north from Scotland will eventually bring you to Iceland and Greenland. That's right up to the North Pole, which we had spoken about some weeks ago. And to the southwest, across the Irish Sea, is Scotland's closest neighboring island of Northern Ireland and Ayr. A stone's throw from the heart of Europe, which is from Scotland, the best of Europe, is just a stone's throw away. Some of the most celebrated major European cities are right on the doorstep of Scotland. And with excellent links by land, sea, and air, traveling to and from overseas or the rest of the day is extremely convenient for all. And from the major airports, no destination is out of reach. You got Glasgow Prestwick, you got Edinburgh, you got Inverness, the Aberdeen Airport. They're all served by regional and international airlines, offering excellent links to major European airports and the hubs like Amsterdam, London, Paris, and Frankfurt. So you have, it's very, the airports that you have, are the way they're located, if you look at a map of Scotland, you will see that you have these cities where the airports are situated. It's completely, it's covering almost the entire country. So whichever area you want to go to, very easy. You go to that particular airport, and from there you will go down to whichever city you're going to from there, which makes it very, very convenient. And then when it comes to exploring Scotland, it's as much about the journey as the destination. You'll find that traveling to the main tourist spots is a piece of cake, and with a little careful planning, more remote areas are readily accessible too. So now to consider how you'll get around. Luckily, the country is well connected by an extensive road and rail network, with a variety of options available for getting from place A to place B. Public transport provides trains and bus services to Scottish towns and cities, as well as many villages and ferry ports. Access to very remote areas and islands is straightforward by car, ferry, or aeroplane. And then you can also, what is so convenient in Scotland as a tourist, if you're going from South Africa to Scotland, you can drive around in Scotland. The roads are clearly marked, so it's very easy to drive. And the requirements also, nothing much required. You can drive as a South African in Scotland. Driving is a great way to explore Scotland. Whether you want to tour Scotland by car, by camper van, or by motorcycle, having your own wheels means you can enjoy the trip at your own pace, stop off whenever you want to, whenever you can, and you know, whenever it takes your fancy, wherever you want to stop, you can do that. Scotland's extensive road networks makes it easy to drive around the country and provides fast, efficient travel between cities and major towns, and great access to more rural areas also. The motorway network runs throughout the central belt, with major links further north to Aberdeen and south to England. You have the trunk roads, also called the A roads, connect the rest of the country from the main routes that you have. And then you have the national tourist routes. The national tourist routes also, you have the, it's called, it, you know, it's like you know, in the States, you have the Route 66. I don't know, you must be knowing of the Route 66, which starts from Miami. And to drive on that, I know when I drove on that, it's an excellent route. You have that similar to Route 66, which is called the North Coast 500, which spans for 500 miles around Scotland. Now, there's so much when it comes to driving yourself in Scotland. But we'll continue with all this right after the news. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back. If you just joined us, you're listening to myself, Mohammed Lambat, on Radio Islam, Medium Wave 1548 on the Globe-trotting program on this lovely Sunday morning, alhamdulillah. And it is truly a lovely Sunday morning this morning, shukar, alhamdulillah. As we heard before the news, we were talking about Scotland. We just started talking about Scotland. Scotland being a holiday destination. We tend to go to, when we say we're going to the UK, we only think of London. Or, more so, we talk of Batley, we talk of Preston, we talk of those places where all our people are situated, more or less, I would say. And basically, London is what we talk about. When we talk of the UK, you talk of Great Britain, you're talking of Scotland, you're talking of Ireland also. Those are also places of beautiful holiday destinations. So look at that also. We don't only look at London and say, there we've been to the UK and we're done, was it finished. There's beauty out in Scotland. The people, there's lots of Muslims in Scotland. We must remember there's lots of Muslims there. And fortunately for us as South Africans, there are Hufaz that went from here for Taraweeh to Scotland. And that's also, you know, it's also something which many South Africans have done throughout the world. So alhamdulillah. So it's something which, look at it and go meet our people, meet the Muslims throughout the world. Whichever destination you go, make it a point that whatever you do, wherever you go, let us meet some Muslim people. Even if it's just one person you meet there, exchange ideas, talk to them. Talk to them about Islam on your side. Just as going for a holiday, yes. Spend 10 minutes talking to somebody. That can change your life, that can change that person's life, inshallah. And by doing so, you can share Islamic ideas, and that will encourage them probably for wanting to come to South Africa also. If you tell them you're from South Africa, and this is what South Africa has to offer Islamically, they may come to South Africa, inshallah. Now, we spoke about the stunning 500-mile coastal line route, which is that 500-mile route is Scotland's answer to, as I said before the news, the Route 66 of the United States. And that Route 66 is a road which you get on in Miami, which is the southern tip of the northern of North America. And from there, that route can take you state to state on one massive highway, 3-4 lane highway, sometimes even becomes 5 lanes. And it's one route, all clearly marked. Now, the 500-mile coastal route in Scotland is the answer to that. Beginning and ending in the Highland capital of Inverness, the North Coast 500 spans the northern coast of the Highlands and will take you past towering Munros, ancient sea stacks, and glittering locks. And that route you can drive on, which is clearly marked on ramps, off ramps, which cities, which towns, and you can go on and drive on that route. That's if you're driving yourself. And then you have the camper van hire, which you can do there. There's a number of companies which hire the hire a car from Scotland. You do that when you get into whichever city you get into. Even from Glasgow, you hire a car, you hire a camper van, you hire a motor, that's motor homes, caravans, and you go with that, and you do your tours with that to stay and safe. Those areas, you have your camping areas, extremely safe. You don't have to worry of getting towed away or robbed or anything in those caravans. But obviously, wherever you go throughout the world, the important thing is you take care, you look after your belongings, you put it close together, lock up what you have to. And we as South Africans, we are prone to do that all the time because of the way we live in South Africa. At night, we lock or shut down completely, we lock ourselves up in our homes. So we're used to things like that. So wherever you go, it's nothing new for us. Just do that wherever you are. It's not something where you are forced to do it because you'll get killed. No. It's not like that. But just rather be safe. And then you hire a car for your holiday. You can set your own pace and take the magical scenery as you go throughout Scotland. And Scotland's got greenery throughout Scotland. And then what you need, all you need there for the open road is your license. If you're coming from outside the EU, as long as you have a valid license from your own country, from South Africa, which you can drive in the UK for up to 12 months with that license. So you can do that. Speed limits is often signposted. Look out for circular signs with a red border, a number that reflects miles per hour. They don't work in kilometers, they work in miles per hour. And if there's no signpost, then the national speed limits apply. Now, your speed limits on the highways there, you're looking at 70 miles per hour, which is about 112 kilometers. That's for cars, for buses, minibuses. And then for cars with towing caravans, trailers, and small little trucks, it's 60 miles per hour. And that is your speed limit. Then you have the dual carriageways, which is also 70 miles per hour and 60 miles per hour, respectively. But the built-up areas, the towns and cities. Now, in the towns and cities that you have, the built-up areas are, you have, in the built-up areas, you have 30 miles per hour you're allowed to drive, which is about 48 kilometers per hour. And it's quite common around the residential areas and particularly near schools for a clearly signposted 20 miles per hour maximum speed. So just be careful when you're driving around in built-up areas when you're in Scotland, because the problem is we tend to have that notion in South Africa we can drive up, you know, in wherever it is, and we have that tendency. And be very careful when it comes to your children, when you're putting them on the back seats also. Unlike
it's becoming known in South Africa, but in all these Western countries and also European countries, the important thing is your children are not allowed to be seated in front if they are shorter than about 100, it's just about a meter short or something. They have to be strapped down at the back in the car seat. They insist on that, and that is law. Otherwise, they take your license away. And we've had a similar experience in the United States, in Miami also, so be very careful. And they apply the rule. And when you are abroad, do not think of taking out that $50 out of the window or $20 out of the window and saying, oh, you stopped me up in your license card, you got that. Let it go through. That doesn't work there. That's a South African concept, I would say. And it works here for us. It doesn't work that side. So be very careful. Please be very careful. And then your fuel also, it's your normal fuel that you have there. And then you have LP gas, which they use a lot in that region. Yeah, the cars are also built up such where on the one side of the tank you have your normal fuel, and next to it there's a little nozzle which they fill gas in. So you have that option. And then there are, generally the roads tend to be busier around towns and cities during the mornings and evenings, rush hours, generally from about 7:30 or 7 in the morning till about 9:30, and from about 4 to about 6:30, which is also about our times. And there are no toll roads or bridges in Scotland. Flatland, no toll roads. The roundabouts, which are circles, which we call circles here, are commonly used, and the way to do it is to give way to vehicles from your right and turn left on entering into the circle, into the roundabout. And there they have bus lanes, which are used in some cities. They can also be used by buses and taxis when in operation at certain times of the day. And then some rural roads are single lane, but have passing places, so traffic in opposite directions can pass safely. And you might encounter some farm animals, wildlife on the rural roads. So when you're driving there, just be very careful. There will be signs. There are signs as you're traveling along those routes. You will find the signboards also posted where there's animals that would just come out and pop out from just about anywhere. So that is also something which you've got to be very, very careful. And then you also, you might encounter some, some on the roads also. You just be very careful where you have. On a single road, you'll find trucks going slow and so on. So just don't overtake anyhow and anywhere. Very important, especially when you're in that area. Very, very important there. And then you also have, it's illegal to use cell phones. Well, that's, most parts in the world, it's illegal to use cell phones. And then, as I said, children under the age of 12 who are just over a meter higher, so under a meter or so, car seats, very important. Now, the weather and the climate in Scotland, we've heard plenty of jokes. Whenever you hear plenty of jokes about the Scottish weather, but most of them aren't true. Scotland's climate is actually quite moderate and very changeable, although on occasions we get really, really, really hot or really cold weather. And as the old Scottish saying goes, there's no such thing as bad weather. You only have the wrong clothes on. So just consider that for our side also. And then January and February are generally the coldest months in Scotland, with the daytime maximum temperatures between 2 and 7 degrees, I would say. And now, the temperatures in January, February are generally the coldest months in Scotland, with the daytime maximum temperatures averaging around maximum to about 7 degrees, and between 2 and 7 degrees. July and August are normally July and August you're looking at about 19, 20 degrees. And then you have your four seasons, which in Scotland you have your normal summer, winter, autumn, spring, but as we know in London also, you have your four seasons in one day. You go into a shopping complex, it's scorching hot outside. When you get out of the complex, you'll find it's raining. Next best thing, the sun is out again, but then you get a chill that comes past you again. So it's like four seasons in one day. And then you also have very long summer days. Scotland's high latitude means that although winter days are short, in summer there are very long daylight hours and often an extended twilight. In the north of the country, which is Lerwick in Shetland, it has about 4 hours more daylight and midsummer than London. At this time of the year, there is actually no complete darkness in the far north of Scotland. And with extra hours of daylight, you can pack a lot in for the day. You can do much more in the day, where you'll find at midnight people are playing golf, things like that. And then you also have
despite being a relatively small country, one of the most surprising things about the Scottish climate is just how much it varies from one region to another. It's often the case that you can drive for about 20 minutes and you find that the conditions are completely different weather-wise. And then you also have the combination of mountainous landscapes and the prevailing winds from the Atlantic means that the Western Highlands are among some of the wettest and windiest places in Europe, or as we call it, atmospheric. And then, come rain or sunshine, even if it does rain, Scotland boasts a fantastic range of galleries, museums, and other attractions to keep you entertained all year round. So even if it's raining, there's lots of other things to do. It's not only outdoor stuff that you can do in Scotland. And then, it's, you know, regardless of the weather, they cater for weather in a point where, when it's cold, because they know that it's cold in that area, in that region, in that whole country. So, when it's extremely cold, you get into the indoor tourist attractions. You have the museums, there's many, many things to do. And then you also have the average number of days with snowfall in Scotland ranges from about 15 to 20 days. However, the peaks and mountains of Highlands experience about 100 days of falling snow. And that must be beautiful. And that is ski paradise. The ski season varies each year, but generally it runs from about November to April. Scotland's 5 ski centres provide some of the best value snowboarding and skiing in Europe. And you can only imagine coming from those mountain peaks. And Scotland being mountainous, being very... When you look at Scotland as a country as a whole, you have your cities, but in between, very much like if you look at Mpumalanga on our side, very much so. You have mountains, you have forests, you have all those things. That is just beautiful on that side. And the strong winds in from the Atlantic and the North Sea make the outer Hebrides and Sutherland a paradise for windsurfers also. So if you are a sports fanatic, water fanatic, there are times you got to check out before you go out to Scotland which months for you to enjoy your particular sport. Because there's so much to do when it comes to going and doing all these. There's skis, there's surfing, there's swimming, there's all that even. Although the water's cold there, but if you enjoy swimming, you enjoy surfing, believe me, you'll thoroughly enjoy that. And then, also Islam in Scotland. Islam in Scotland, it includes all aspects of the Islamic faith in Scotland. You have the first Muslim known to have been in Scotland was a medical student who studied at the University of Edinburgh from 1858 to 1859. The production of goods and Glasgow's busy port meant that many Lascars were employed there. Most Muslims in Scotland are members of families that immigrated in the later decades of the 20th century, and at about the 2011 census in Scotland, Muslim comprised of about 1.5% of the Scottish population, which exceeds 80,000 people, 80,000 Muslims in a small country like that. And the first named Muslim in Scotland was Wazir Beg from Mumbai, then formerly known as Bombay. He's recorded as being a medical student who studied at the University of Edinburgh, and manufacturing in Glasgow's busy seaport meant that many Lascars also came there, and Dundee was the peak of importing jute and sailors from Bengal who were also seen at its ports. And records from Glasgow's sailors' home show that nearly a third, it's almost about 5,500 of the boarders in 1903 were Muslim Lascars. So the sailors' home that they had there, a third of them were Muslims. Made such a big difference. However, the immigration of Muslims to Scotland is a relatively recent event where they had mass migration going in. And the majority of Scottish Muslims are members of families who immigrated in the late 20th century. And, you know, the population being 1.5%, which is fairly good in for a country like that, and growing as the years go by. And Muslims are the third largest non-Christian group after atheists. Christians being the largest, as we know, Scotland, Ireland, the Christian population is huge there. It's predominantly Christian. After Christianity, you have the atheists and the agnostics, and the third is Muslims. Many Scottish Muslims are South Asian descent, primarily originating from Pakistan. And the three important masjids in Scotland are Edinburgh Central Masjid, which took more than 6 years to complete at the cost of about £3.5 million, and has a main hall that can hold over 1,000 musallis. Glasgow Central Masjid is another one, and then you have the Dundee Central Masjid, which are also important masjids. More than that, there are lots of other masjids, small masjids around throughout the country. There's lots of musallas also throughout the country because of the Muslim population that is growing at the moment in the whole of Europe also. And then halal foods also available in all major cities and towns of Scotland. There's lots of halal places, especially in the major cities you'll find, and where all the masjids are around in around that vicinities, you'll find lots of halal places. And there's quite strict adherence to halal also in Scotland. Lots of it, but just like in any country for that matter, just be very wary when it comes to the halal, but lots of strict halal also. And then we also have, what is the capital of Scotland? Edinburgh is the capital. So when you fly into Scotland, lots of times you'd fly directly into Edinburgh, and from there you'd go to all your different places. And then, as we mentioned, the temperatures is the best time, what's your best time to go also. The important thing to know is your passports, visas, customs. Do you need a visa for Scotland? If you are, as a South African also, and if you've got a European passport, you don't need. But if you've got a South African passport, you need a visa. Depends on how long you're planning to stay and where you are visiting, but you will need a visa. With all these new rules. And also, another thing is, when it comes to all these new rules, just make inquiries before you go. Because the rules are changing by the day. So just make inquiries. And then, also, what goods can you take into Scotland? You can bring your everyday items. There's limits on tobacco items that you can take. When it comes to your medication also, you're allowed to take your medication. Just make sure that your bottles are marked correctly. Take your medication, whatever you have to take. If need be, take a medical certificate. If there's excess of medication that you've got to take your medical certificate from the doctor. Take it with you. And then also, as far as taking currency into the country, you are allowed to take any amount of currency into the country. You have to declare any amount over 10,000 euros when you enter into the UK. Declare anything above 10,000 euros, but you are allowed to take it. And then there are ATMs that's available. There's banks, there's Bureau de Change. You get all these money exchanges, you'll get them. So that's fine, not a problem. Another thing which you must always do whenever you're doing your shopping, make sure you ask them for receipts with the text numbers and so on, with all your details on there. 20% is their VAT that you get back at the airport. So you will save a lot. Once you're purchasing, you get back 20% of your purchases in VAT. So take that with you. Make sure you have the receipts and you have the documents, the correct documents when you get to the airport. And that's what you really need if you really want to save money on that. And then also you have the friendly and knowledgeable staff there to help you whenever you come to the airports. What is important, I find, is that these information centers, many parts of the world, you'll find that they have these information centers. In the city centers, you'll find the big I sign. Go to there, wherever you are, do not be afraid. Walk into that I sign little cubicle. You'll get whatever information you want. Believe me when I tell you, you'll get clear information. They will give you maps. They'll give you just about anything required to tour that particular city or that particular town of the country. Visit those places. If you are doing your own visits, get all the information and then you do your tours from there. That will help you a lot because of the information, the detailed information that they have, that they will give you. And then you have, you know, there's so much of shopping centers that you can go to. There's so much of things to do and see in Scotland, which you can do. And where do you start? There's probably a million and one ways to fill your holidays with incredible things to do in Scotland. So how about the grand castles, the train rides through majestic landscapes, island hopping adventures, an afternoon in a gallery or a museum, coastal explorations, following a literary trail, white water rafting, shopping expeditions. We literally can go on and on and on. There's so much to do because of the terrain of the country. You can just do about anything and everything. And then you also have the tiny castles to several towering Munros and even an ancient sea stack. A vast array of enticing places await visitors along the way. So when you are there for natural beauty, take your cameras with you. You'll get beautiful scene and sceneries. Then you have the mountains. Then you have the beaches also. They are, because of the way the country is situated, it's coastal right around the country. From east, north, and west, you have ocean. So the beaches, you have all different types of beaches. And as I said, the best way to travel is, if you're going on your own, hire a car, you can do it, it will happen. And then you have islands and island hopping also. Because it's an archipelago, you want to experience the best of Scottish islands, then do an island hopping trip. Just the right thing for you if you want to go to different islands and enjoy. Whether you've only got a couple of days or a couple of weeks, it's well worth taking the time to explore a few islands and discover the unique character of each. The main island groups which are the best suited for touring includes the Inner Hebrides and the Outer Hebrides in the West, Scotland and Orkney and Shetland in the North. And there's so many islands that you can go to. Why and what to do at the islands also, there's so much. And whether you fancy traveling between Scotland's island by ferry or by plane, you'll find plenty of ways you can do it that way. You can do it by ferry, which will be a lovely way to do it. So rather do that, go by ferry, go from island to island. And that is Scotland on its own. And there's so much more than Scotland. From there, you can drive down to the UK. Now, inshallah, we'll see maybe next week or the following week, we'll try and cover the UK, London itself. London and surroundings and all the cities around London. We'll try and cover that and see if we can get some information. I'm trying to see, on Monday, I'm going to try and probably get somebody from the British Embassy, see if we can get somebody to talk to us from there. And that will help us if we can talk to them, because that will clarify the visa issues and so on also. So we'll try and do something from there and see probably by Monday. I'll try and hook up something and see. Whenever they can be available for us, we'll talk about that particular region and the whole of the... We'll talk about the whole of the UK then, inshallah. So let's see what happens from there. From myself, Muhammad Lambad, until next week, same place, same time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.